Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. While I was recently in Rimini, Italy for the World Magic Championship, otherwise known as FISM, I posted daily updates from the conference that featured chats with friends who were in attendance. I tried to give you a flavor of what was going on through the voices of some of the attendees, performers, dealers, and contestants. Each day, for 6 days, I sought out and recorded informal, unscripted chats. I edited and posted these updates every day in order to give you the most current information on what was going on. The podcasts were also archived for anyone to hear and download at any time for historical and educational purposes. One of the things I like to do is not only talk about things I'm interested in knowing, but also what I think you, the listener, might like to know and ask if you were sitting down with us. I try to keep the total running time of the podcast to around an hour, so they'll be digestible chunks of information, easy to listen to during drive time for commuters, and easy to fast forward or rewind to hear just the parts or interviews that you might like to hear. Most of these updates contain 3, 4, or maybe 5 people talking for 5 to 15 minutes. Sometimes I even do drive-bys or elevator chats that I record during our ride in the elevator between floors when I catch someone interesting. Although my intent is to keep the chats to a few minutes so you get great sound bites from many people giving their perspective of the conventions, I occasionally find that our conversations go a little longer than expected. In those cases, I don't want to stop the mojo, but rather I want to keep delving further into whatever line of thinking the conversation is going. One such conversation happened during FISM when I ran into a longtime friend whom I had not seen in many years, Flip Hollema. Although we keep in touch with holiday cards, we rarely see each other since he lives in Holland and I am in Houston. So, when we found ourselves in between events, we found a quiet corner, sat down, and chatted for a while. Though some of the information is stuff that I already knew about Flip, I thought some of the listeners might like to know what I know and learn how Flip developed the Flipstick move. We discuss that and much more in this podcast, which I know you will enjoy. So, from Rimini, Italy, please welcome Flip to the Magic Word. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and you never know who you're going to be running into when you're at FISM because there are so many people here of international acclaim, and I'm here with one that I'm proud to call a good friend. Here is Flip Hollema. Flip, how are you?
Hollema.
Am I misspelling that?
Never mind. Flip is okay. But I'm just wondering, as this neat little device, and it brings over all the communications and also the... Oh, the mistakes we make, also.
That's right.
No, but I feel fine. I feel very happy here. Meeting so many friends like you just a couple of minutes ago, I was so surprised to see you. It's a pleasure.
It's been a while since you've been to the United States. Last time, I guess, was when you were with us in Texas, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. It was very nice there. I remembered it well.
Yeah.
But the two museums you went to.
You continue to surprise me. In every room we went to, it seems like that I love art, and the fact that I felt like I was with a tour guide as we were going from room to room, and you were actually enlightening me on things I thought I knew, but you were sharing.
And I think we also went to this, a little bit outside of Houston, I think, to this place where we saw the Mexican magician now is doing so well. He was working there. With big billiard balls, etc.
Yes, was that the Magic Island?
Yeah.
We were working?
Yeah,
yes.
And another magician as well.
Yes.
Nice surprise for me as well.
Right.
I love United States. I think I've been in the United States more than any, maybe, than any European magician. Once I counted, since 1972, I've done more than 152 lectures in the United
152
States.
152 in the United States?
Yeah, and everywhere. Some place I went twice, so in Houston I've been twice.
Yeah.
Magic Castle a couple of times, in other places only once, but everything is very different there. So, yeah, I like
now,
to
what are you
there.
Doing now? I mean, you haven't been to the States
for
lecture, so...
Technically, I'm retired, but it doesn't mean a thing. So I get my pension.
Yeah.
But I still keep doing magic until I drop dead, I think. Or until I feel now... people say, well, I've seen the old Flip, but it's a little bit pathetic. So then when I know that, I stop right away.
Stop right there.
I kill myself.
It's too bad whenever you see someone who's kind of past their prime and they...
Yeah.
Because you have a certain image.
I don't want that. I don't want that. I've seen some people that do like that. You know, in a way, I was happy that Rory was bitten by this tiger.
I hadn't thought about that.
Because I think they already were... I saw them the last time in the show and they were not... They didn't have the same charisma as before.
They were
like puppets on a string.
It wasn't fresh.
Yes. So, and I admired them when I saw them. For instance, the first time was MGM, I think, when they came down the stairs. They had such a charisma. I said, I don't have to see anything else. I know you can do it.
Sure.
So that's fantastic when you have that, because like Goshman said, the magic is in you. The magic is you, which is true. It's your personality. And the tricks are just a vehicle to bring it over.
Well, that's something that you do whenever that you're on stage, certainly. I mean, you use small things. I mean, with the rope and the little gestures you do.
Yeah, I hope so.
Like the Chinese guy with the rope and the
mustache,
whatever.
Many people remember that.
Sure, and of course the flipstick you're famous for, and other kinds of things that are small tricks as opposed to big illusions, you know.
Always the flipstick. I feel very flattered that so many people took it up, and many do it much better than I do. And they worked on it. So, wow.
Didn't know what you were inventing at the time. How did you come up with that idea?
Oh, it's quite easy. I was in art school. I was 16 years old.
Yeah.
And I was playing with a Japanese bamboo brush. I held it at the end, just like a pencil, which I have here.
Yeah.
With my thumb and first finger at the end, so going like this. And I wanted to pick up something from the table. I went like this. So the pencil or the brush went inside.
Rotated back to your wrist.
Yeah. So I say, hey, that might be a move. So I went to the toilet in the men's room to see in the mirror what it looks like. So I did that. Oh my God, I can see it. So, but maybe it's good. So when I went home, I need a movement a little bit bigger. I did like this. Jeez, I did magic for myself, you know. And then very, very fast I discovered lots of variations and possibilities with it.
Now, what are the kinds of variations? I mean, as far as just...
Yeah, well, I made some DVDs. So this is one DVD. Since a couple of years, another DVD. It's called Flixing, which is about the use of your sleeve and side pockets, and also the inside of the jacket. Mm-hmm. So using your jacket every way possible.
Yeah.
I call it Flixing because it goes so damned fast, like a blitz and flick.
Gotcha. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, and I use the sleeves
Sleeting.
A lot, and the pocketing also use the inertia or the gravity of the things. I have a thing like here in this flipstick inward position. I go like this. I just, by its own way, let it drop in my pocket, and then I move forward, and it's gone.
Right.
It's quite easy. So I'm a lazy magician.
Have you ever used a special side pocket that you built?
No.
I
just
like that?
My jackets I just buy off the rack.
Okay.
And they have to certain things because I have to. If you have flaps on your pocket, you have to put them inside, otherwise you cannot put anything inside, for instance. No, and your sleeves, they don't have to be too narrow, otherwise you have a problem. So there's a couple of things, but that makes a lot of very direct magic possible.
Right.
But I do more than that. So I now, for instance, I'm writing my book on my card magic, which is a little bit different than most other magicians.
You have some tremendous card effects.
Yeah,
I remember from your lecture from before.
I'm very much interested in history of magic, so I'm busy writing the history of Dutch magic, which will very small book, but anyway, we have some interesting things. For instance, the famous painting of Jeroen Bosch.
Oh, yes.
The magician.
The conjurer, yeah.
It was the next year. It's 500 years dead, so there will be a large exhibition of the original Bosch paintings, and also this famous painting of the magician, so... Maybe you can do something with it. I want to have a cups and balls competition.
You're going to have it there in...
In Den Bosch, yes, Hertogenbosch, where the exhibition is. And maybe, you know what a tableau vivant is?
I do.
So maybe we make a tableau vivant of that picture.
Wow.
And suddenly it comes to life. And the magician does the magic. And I discovered very interesting things about this painting.
This is fabulous. I don't know if you were the one who inspired me, but I've actually done lectures on just that painting. And
is that true?
I have, and about Aronis Bosch and about how that he was named after his city, and I guess how he started painting these church icons and everything, and how that he was...
It's all symbolic in his painting.
Yes.
You know,
and then the triptych, of course.
The kick was the frog inside the mouth of the spectator.
Yes.
Was a symbol of gullibility.
Oh, I thought it was supposed to be like a devil or something.
No, symbol of gullibility. The guy behind...
Yes, with the pick in his pocket.
The pickpocket.
Yeah.
Is a Dominican monk. Because at that time, the Habsburgs were taking over... Those kings were taking over Holland also. But they were related to the Inquisition, Spanish Inquisition.
Yes.
And they wanted to put all those people down. The the acts of the Inquisition were done by the Dominican monks. So Johann Bosch was, as one of a guild of painters, he was against that.
Yes.
So he painted the Dominican monk like a thief.
A thief, yes.
The magician itself is a bad guy because he looks very bad with his nose like this and a buckle here, a buckle there.
Right.
But he has black curly hair. He was not from Flanders. He came from south of France or Spain. Inquisition. Roman Catholic. You know.
Oh, so
the table is not a magician's table. It's an altar.
Yes, so that I knew. And, of course, then you had the one ring, which was like a halo, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things.
What about the dog? Did that have any significance? Or the crow?
I think the dog. There was an owl in the pocket at the side.
Yes, an owl. But I was thinking the crow in the moonlight. Up on the fence.
Well, if you try, everything was symbolic.
Yes.
Well, not only with him, but later also with paintings of Pieter Bruegel. There's also of magicians, like the war between carnival and fasting. Mm-hmm. There's a magician in there. So that's 50 years later than this painting by Jeroen Bosch, maybe 60 years later. There's a magician there in the middle, sitting behind a barrel.
Yes.
Just a cups and balls on top, with the cards behind. So it's a proof that it's card magic also. So I started, when was the first card trick described in the book? And I found maybe by Luca Pacioli, who was a Renaissance monk, Franciscan monk, who lived together with Leonardo da Vinci. So maybe they were gay, or quite probably, for years. And Luca Pacioli, he was the inventor of double bookkeeping. He was a mathematical genius, but also he wrote a book with a lot of diversions, the mathematical puzzles, etc. And there's one card trick in. Year 1500.
I was going to say that predated Reginald Scott's discovery of witchcraft.
Yeah. And so a couple of years later, there was a book discovered by Vanni Bossi by another Italian. That was the first book that described just only card tricks. It was written for an Italian prince who wants to know how not to be cheated by cheaters.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, it was translated into English in the Gibichere, which from Bill Kalush, etc.
Yes,
so you can find it there. I think those things is fascinating and about history of magic.
Oh, well, I love art and magic, and that's one of the reasons I'd love to speak with you. Because
You know, I've visited a couple of those magic collective things in Europe, the national ones and the international ones. So in Hamburg last year, Bill Spooner of Wally was there.
Yes. He did a book on the Lotus Bowl.
I wanted to say that. He talked about the Lotus Bowl, which is a very old thing. 500 years before Christ, you already had the Lotus Bowl principle. Isn't that fantastic?
It is. I do that in my show all the time. It's one of my staples.
You talk about that also?
No, I don't talk about it. I just perform it.
But it's I think it's fantastic that the people were that clever so many years ago.
Right.
So it makes you very enthusiastic. So I formed a little group in Holland of other magicians that are interested in the history of magic.
So. Well, I think that it's important that we know where we came from so we can move it forward, because that way you can build on the past much easier than trying to reinvent a wheel.
Yeah. Well, you can reinvent a wheel. You make another wheel, but maybe or better mousetrap with a wheel or whatever. No, you have to do it both ways. You have to study the past.
Are you still creating doing more stuff all the time?
Yeah. A lot of things with all kinds of materials. It's my fun, because I don't have that many performances anymore. But I could maybe if I was more commercial or on it. But I like to be at home as well and sitting at breakfast. I take a deck of cards and I play with it and I find another trick, so to say, or another move. Mm-hmm. Or with playing with other material. So
do you write them down? Do you record them?
Sometimes,
do you make a video of it?
Yes, or I put them in a lecture if I think it's worthwhile.
Right.
And it's good enough. Because I've invented so much material, which is good material, but not for me, but for another magician. He can use it to good advantage.
Right.
So for instance, last year I gave a lecture about magic with paper in France.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things you can do with paper.
You mean like origami folding or cutting or both?
Everything. Mm-hmm. Tearing it up and make it whole again. Origami. But it is a cheap material. You can make whole
routine out of it.
Yeah, whole routines, whole shows even, if you want. It's a nice...
Well, Gene Anderson did that with a newspaper.
I saw him...
Earlier today.
Yesterday. I talked with him.
He comes all the time, and he will sit through all of the competitions and making all of his notes. And
he loves this as well. Yeah.
Now, you've been a judge for FISM in the past, I think, haven't you?
No, never a judge in Holland. Yeah, well, I will be a judge in the beginning of August in St. Wendel, which is in Germany, between Trier and Mainz. This is a nice part in the western part of Germany. I will be, for the first time, a judge as an international street magicians festival competition.
How do you judge a street competition? I think that'd be...
Oh, we have some criteria. Uh-huh. How they draw people in, uh-huh, and how they hold them, and if there's any originality, etc., that it is not too long, so normally they get 20 minutes because they have to make their audience, mm-hmm, and how to make their head.
Right. Well, that was what I was going to say. Typically, whenever I've seen these competitions, it's judged upon how much money is made, you know, what's in the hat at the end.
Yeah, well, some are better than others. Some are more artistic and others are more commercial.
Yeah.
But, I learned a lot of them because that's a real thing. You're back against the wall. Mm-hmm. You have to win the audience to get the money because you have to live from it.
Well, that goes back to the street magic and talk about history again, that the cups and ball street magician was one of the earliest performers. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Most of them in the street, sometimes in a how do you call it, street restaurant like this.
How far back does that go, to your knowledge? I mean, as far as...
Well, we know 500 years before Christ, they already did the cups and balls.
Oh, well, I guess that's right, that we saw it on the pyramid engraving you're talking about.
No. That's completely mistaken. Probably there are two bakers that use forms to put the dough in.
I've heard that also.
Yeah.
You think that's what that was?
And I read the Westcar paper, it was in Berlin, in this museum there, where they have the Westcar papyrus about Dedi, the first recorded magician who cut off the head of oxus and put it back again.
Yes.
That was interesting to see that. But furthermore, about tricks, we don't know anything about, not from the Babylonians, Sumerians, not from the Egyptians. Mm-hmm. Pity, but it started. What we know is, like for a Greek, Alciphron, who wrote about the cups and balls, and I don't know, was Virgilius or another guy in Rome, I don't remember his name. So, but you know what I wondered about the cups and balls there? They were in Greek, they were called psephophaiktes, which means those who play with stones, with pebbles.
Hmm.
Wait a minute, that makes a lot of noise.
Kind of like Paul Gertner's.
Maybe they had something about it. Maybe the cups were of leather.
Yeah.
They have less noise. And in Rome, they were called astabulari, which means that they say that they worked with dishes. They were meant to have vinegar in it. I don't know, because aceite is vinegar in Spanish, but aceituna is olive.
Olive oil?
No, olive.
Oh, okay.
Huh? So aceituna is olive. So I think
maybe
they use olives. They don't make noise.
Instead of balls or little...
And they have it
plenty
in abundance.
Of
so I would like to find out if that's the reason.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess you could research that by looking at some photos or pictures. Now, I just don't know, not necessarily photos, but like Bob Reed had just...
Oh, yeah, I have his
extensive
book.
Collection.
I have the book.
I have heard that book was
fantastic.
Of a disappointment. That was not necessarily the book that was wanted to be printed. I think that they had a lot of
pictures.
It's a
beautiful book.
It is.
It's a coffee. I have it.
I have it as well.
You have it, too. One of the 200 he made, or 200.
Yes.
I was one of the first who
but
bought
somebody
it.
Somebody told me that I think his wife was holding the photos or something or wanted to have this printed, but it went to a printer before that it was...
I think there are 1,200 prints of reproduction of prints in it.
Yeah.
Isn't that enough?
Well, it was the explanation, I think, of it, that somebody they wanted to do more...
Maybe. Well, I think it's a beautiful book.
It is pretty, yes.
My friend Volker Huber, who produces art books and they represent modern visual artists in Germany, but he made... Christian's books about Hoofdzinser.
Becker,
Volker Huber.
Oh,
he lives in Offenbach, which is near Frankfurt. And he has an art gallery and makes art books, but he's one of the best collections of old magic in the world. He has the oldest painting of a magician, older than Jeroen Bosch. There are older prints than Jeroen Bosch, but older paintings. Mm-hmm. He bought at an auction at Christie's one panel of a wedding chest, but like this.
Yeah, one of the
panels. And you see a table with a magician behind it with a magic wand and a hat. And from the hat he produces a fish. And there's a little boy who looks in awe. And there are some other adult people there. And they point at the boy, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
And there's also a dog and a hoop. Just like, just a street magician. But why a fish? I told Waldgruber, well, in Italian, the fish is a symbol for the man.
Genitals.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was just a joke for the boy, because it was a wedding chest, it's for the wedding night.
Oh,
you see?
I see. Uh-huh.
So that was funny also. But he has it. This is a painting like this, and I have seen it.
Well, now I understand that the Ramus Bosch painting is very small also. I've never seen
the
original.
Yeah, no, it's only
it's
like
about 18
this.
Inches
so
or something.
This,
yeah. All the pictures I've seen, of course, are much larger.
Yeah, like if you kind of reproductions like this.
Yes.
This size, but yeah. But it is a lot of fun to find that out. So for instance, my history of the Dutch history of magic, it starts with the Flanders. The Flanders was a knight, those people of Art King Arthur the Knights, you know?
Oh, the Knights of the Round
Table. Harnesses, etc.
Yes.
Is a poem of more than 100 couplets, and mm-hmm. one of the couplets, the one of the things, talks about that the goochelen onder the hood, you could do magic under the hat, but then there's a sentence about a capoon, it's a castrated cock, mm-hmm. with fat, mm-hmm. but the thing is, I later found in other magic books as well, you take a cock, a fat cock, you pluck its feathers,
yeah.
you burn it a little bit in the oven, but so he's unconscious, but he's still alive.
Wow, okay.
Then you put him on the table, and when suddenly puts his fork in it, he awakes, and he walks. He
oh, wow.
Off, he jumps off.
Okay.
And that's the oldest thing I've found.
Well, I've heard that about flies. You put a fly in a freezer, and it kind of will chill it, and then whenever you bring it out of the freezer, it's kind of dead, but after it starts to warm up, it will fly away.
Oh, that is possible.
Have you heard that?
No,
before?
No, it's possible.
I've never tried it, but I've heard that's the case.
No. But those things are nice. And I know about a lot of magicians that came to the Amsterdam Kermis since 1400, mm-hmm. and at 1850. And lots of magicians like Bosco, who came there. Deubler has been from Austria, has been in Holland. And lots of French magicians as well, because around 1800, Napoleon had occupied Holland. Mm-hmm. So a lot of French magicians came to Amsterdam as well.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
I see.
But also, and everybody, the elite in Holland, they spoke French.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, you certainly had a tremendous amount of great thinkers who have come. Correct me if I'm wrong, and I may be thinking of the wrong countries, of people like Tommy Wunder and Gerrit Cooper, mm-hmm. and Fred Capps and mm-hmm. Hank Vermeiden and these guys. Mm-hmm. Aren't they from your area, basically, or...?
Yeah, well, most of the western part of Holland, around Amsterdam, The Hague, Rotterdam, mm-hmm. etc.
I mean, it just seems like everybody was drinking some special Kool-Aid or some water or something that gave them this intelligence that seemed like the center of the creative universe.
I think it's just one of those things, because there have been waves in Holland, so now then you got
seems
the
Korea
wave.
Now, yeah.
No, but no, then you got the wave of good card magicians in Spain, for instance.
Oh, that's true.
We have had a very short wave of good magicians in Norway.
Yeah.
Very short, it was over. So, and Holland also had this wave of world champions from the 50s until the 70s, mm-hmm. for instance. And why
do you think that is? A kind of.
Well, I think partly because the first international conventions were organized by Henk Vermeijden in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. So a lot of Dutch magicians were able to compete and be there because no travel costs.
Good point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good point.
Henk Vermeijden was a good organizer. I think he was a gentleman crook, but anyway.
And I understand he was quite a great instructor, a good coach as well.
Well, to some he was a good coach, mm-hmm. But some, okay, tell you, gentleman crook, but anyway. Fred Capps once told me Flipper, I'm glad you don't have your age, because I would have made it like I have it now, because I were, Fred Kapps was the right guy in the right time, with the right coach, with the right talent, with the right physique, everything. So
yeah,
you don't have to be jealous of this. This is just a unique situation.
Sure.
I knew him quite well, Fred Kapps, but once he told me, when he was rather drunk, because I came to his home several times during a couple of years, the Flip, then when you come tonight, come for dinner as well, and okay, and we etc. So I brought him a bottle of gin, which was empty the next morning at 7 o'clock.
Wow.
And tulips for his wife, but then the one who was a little bit drunk. So when he was young, he had made a strangling contract with Henk Vermeijden. He had to pay 25% of his income for
Fred Kapps.
Yeah, but for many, many years.
Oh my.
He said, well, in company with other magicians, we are quite so civilized with each other. But when I see him in the dark, have a pistol, I'm shooting. He told me that.
Wow. Yeah, I think it's interesting. A lot of magicians may not realize this, but the first time that he appeared on television was on the Ed Sullivan Show with the Beatles. It was the same night the Beatles had performed.
It was difficult.
Did you talk to him about that?
Well, I knew he did that.
Yeah.
I was nearly also on the Ed Sullivan Show. It was when...
You were on the Ed Sullivan Show?
No, I didn't know. We were booked, so Amy Lowe, in the Tenants' Jubilee. And then Richard Ross just made it to the Ed Sullivan Show, but then it stopped, and just I fell out of it, so I never made it. So, well, okay.
Hmm. Now, as far as FISM, when you performed, you won what year?
No, I didn't win. Everybody thinks I won. No, it was in 1970. I competed at the FISM convention in Amsterdam. I didn't win a prize. You know, I have had very high points. I think nearly the third prize.
Yeah.
But years afterwards, I talked with Jean Garance, from Geneva, who was one of the judges. Yell Flip, the problem was your act was too modern, we didn't know how to judge it.
Oh, no, that's
fine. I say thank you very much.
Well.
But anyway, no problem, because outside of the FISM building in Amsterdam, Fred Kapps was standing there, and he had seen my act, and he put up his thumb.
It's
like
a good
this
job, yeah.
That was my prize. He liked it. Yeah. 3 times champion, world champion. And then so I think Bill Larson and Jay Marshall are responsible for my career in magic, because they wanted to have me in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years later, I could make it, 1972. Also with Amy Lowe, who booked me there. We made the whole trip. So I did many, many, 3 months, many magic clubs and conventions, etc. It ended in Hawaii, Honolulu. And so when I came back in Holiday's Hotel, when I'm good, as they seem to say, mm-hmm, maybe I can be a professional magician. So,
right.
So I still was a designer, a graphic and industrial designer, but my wife was an art teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I try for 1 year. When I don't succeed, I go back to designing, but I never look back.
That's fantastic.
And I don't regret it, because I have so many friends. I've seen most of the world, and I think it's fantastic. I'm not rich. I couldn't care at all, but I've... You know, now I'm talking with you. And I
You're rich in friends.
Yeah, so...
Well, the first time I think I saw you, or at least your picture, was in the World's Greatest Magic book, which was a great autograph book back from the 70s, I think.
Oh, yeah, not 70s, I think also...
Was it the early
72?
80s?
Well, it was made... the interview was made at the Tenant Jubilee.
Okay.
By Hila Clark, and she was a writer and a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 72. No, later, I think, because at the Vienna Convention, the book was delivered with all the signatures of all the people that in there, Siegfried and Roy, Doug Vernon, Doug Henning, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have the book with all the signatures?
I do have the book, and I've got so many signatures. You know, I've got yours and Harry Blackstone Jr., and I got Vernon,
I had to sign 200 of those books.
Oh, you did?
With all the... I have one for myself. I have more, but the one with all the signatures.
Wow, that's special, because
a lot of those people,
obviously, probably half of them or more have gone on.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, but for me also, it's... It's a nice memory, because I knew him, because Doug Vernon I met several times.
Right.
Slidini cooked for me in his home, those things.
What kind of food did he cook?
Spaghetti with chicken. That's the only thing he could make. And later I talked with Patrick Page when it was at the 4F convention.
Yeah.
And I told him that story where I was in Slidini's home, and he explained, well, but he made really money with his lessons, but also he was a tailor. He made tails for dove magicians.
Okay.
And he was very proud of the curtains he had made himself, etc. Mm-hmm. So when I met him in Boston, Tony Sladini, and he said, "Flip, when you come to Europe, call me and I cook for you." Okay. So a couple of weeks later, I was in York. I called him and said, "Okay, come over, I cook for you." So I put my pockets full of tricks. So I thought, I have to perform for the great Sladini.
Right, right.
No way. 4 hours in a row, he was doing magic for me, except paper balls overhead, but everything from the book.
Yeah.
Everything.
Was it he teaching you, or he was
I was doing it.
Yeah.
So maybe he wanted me to be a pupil, but I couldn't because I had to go to other places. But
I've heard that so many people have been pupils of his.
Yeah, Fred Kapp was a pupil.
Oh, was he?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he took lessons from Sladini.
Yeah.
Great. But then later I heard from Patrick Page at the 4F when I told this story. I said, you know what? Sladini once came to London. He lived there for a while. Mm-hmm. And he invited me and Jack Avis to his place, and he cooked for us. You know what he cooked?
Spaghetti and chicken.
Exactly. and in the taxi back home, we realized, but we even don't like spaghetti with chicken, but we are so flabbergasted by his personality that we even didn't realize how it tasted.
Now, Di Vernon, of course, was from New York, but spent most of his later life in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Did you know him in Los Angeles?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I remember. It was always very nice with me. And also in Honolulu, Hawaii, I met him in Holland and many other places. But when he was quite old, I was sitting with Magic Christian in the restaurant of the Magic Castle. Di Vernon comes to us with a glass of whiskey and a cigar and a deck of cards. And I show you a trick. And he wanted to start his demon. I forgot. So he went away and 15 minutes later came back. I show you a trick. Demon, I forgot. 3 times in a row. Then he gave up. But he was such a nice man, and mm-hmm.
Now you haven't been to the States then for a while, so you probably need to get back to work the Magic Castle sometime.
Yeah, well, I hope to be back next year.
Good.
And I want to do for the United States. I want to finish with my stage act, the Duplo Magic Act, everything doubles, etc., mm-hmm. and with my flipstick in the Magic Castle. Mm-hmm. Maybe, and then don't do it again, at least in the United States. And don't do it again in Holland already. Mm-hmm. And in England, maybe not.
Retired the act.
Yeah, because it was a boy's sin, so to say. Mm-hmm. I started when I... The first time I presented the act like it is, in 1970, at that convention. But before that, the year before, I won the first prize in General Magic with an act with a flipstick, and there was a flute at that time. So many manipulations were more or less the same. So it's that old already.
Wow.
So then after about 50 years, I think I have to quit with
Time flies.
And a lot of the props are still the same. I never change them. My paper bags, the silks, balls, etc.
And after hundreds or thousands of shows you've done, they're still in good shape? Or
most of it, yes. Some things, yeah. Well, I use some paper napkins.
Yeah, of course.
But this tie...
Is that the tie you wear on stage? Multi-purpose tie.
It's
a beautiful white tie.
From 1970, this tie.
1970?
Yeah.
Oh.
I still have...
It's still stylish.
I still have gym shoes, Korean gym shoes, the same like 1970.
Yeah.
I still use them. Mm-hmm. You don't see they're old. But some things are a little bit... So the cube I use, and the paper bags are a little bit used, but then on the stage you are seeing that there's a lot of black tape and But it's okay. I did last year.
On television, I assume, in Holland as well, doing shows.
In Holland, not so. But this act, my act only has been shown in Holland when I did. Was it in a program in Ottawa years ago, 1978, 79, with Johnny Thompson, Jay Marshall, Shimada, Mark Wilson, and dancers and whatever. And that show was sold to many countries and also once to Holland. Mm-hmm. Finally, my parents and my then wife could see my act because they didn't know at all. In Holland, only 2 or 3 years ago, I did my act for the first time at a magic convention in Holland. Hmm. Most magicians never had seen it.
Right.
But I have done it in
that's night, surprising. Night, I mean, at home,
nightclubs and theaters and TV all over the world, but hardly in Holland. Well, and then I said, "This is the one you never booked me before. This last the only and last time you can see it. That's mm-hmm. it.
Well, so, do they have many or any nightclubs or places to perform in Holland anymore?
We used to have at the place where this Amsterdam Kermis used to be, where the whole Bamberg dynasty mm-hmm. also performed. It was used to Butter Market, but now it's the Rembrandtplein, the place mm-hmm. named after Rembrandt. There were nightclubs there, and the Torbeckerplein was just the place next to it. Lots of nightclubs, but nothing.
Yeah, not anymore. Well, it's the same thing, I think, all around. Yeah. It's just part of vaudeville that died, basically.
Yeah.
With television and YouTube and everything is taken over now.
And rock concerts, etc.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Not really the variety acts that we used to see from before. Well, the book you're working on, then, how soon do you think that might be completed?
Well, I found somebody who is here who is interested in publishing
Good.
It.
Good.
I'm not telling who, but anyway, now I have a kind of a deadline. I have to finish it.
By at least, the next 18 months?
When it will be finished. Yeah, I hope it will be ready somewhere, say, in fall next year or so.
Yeah, for Christmas next year.
Okay. Yeah, it would be nice, or earlier if I can. But now, when I come home, I really seriously have lots of notes mm-hmm. and pictures also.
I'm assuming that you're doing all the illustrations.
My card book will be a book with one or two DVDs. So on the DVDs, I explain all my moves mm-hmm. with a name and a number. So when I explain the tricks,
be that page number.
Yeah, I just say, look at move mm-hmm. number 3B.
You know, I guess Slidini was kind of before his time when he had his two books. You know, he had the one that was just completely pictures, and you would refer to this.
Yeah, it was not bad.
Yeah. That was an interesting way
but
of doing
if you want to study things, I can write tricks and to say, look at me, I found this. That's just egoism, egocentrism. Yeah. But I want people, for all the work I did all those years, that is worthwhile to them to study it and maybe use my material. No? Otherwise,
That was what
just
Paul Daniels
looking in the mirror.
That's what Paul Daniels is saying. It's important to put something down that is something you're proud of that will last for generations after you.
Exactly.
So they don't forget.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my life also. For so many years, I've been mm-hmm. busy finding things. I'm still a kind of an industrial designer. I like to think efficient and functional and beautiful, let's say, and easy to do,
or
easy to handle. So that's thinking I still mm-hmm. have. And I hope you find that in my card magic as well. So.
Have you got a working title for the name of the book yet?
Several.
Oh, okay.
But I keep that secret for a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I appreciate the time that you're taking now. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question then, Flip, to you is, what is your magic word? What is it that is your philosophy of life? What is it that you live by? I mean, I know you
That's too much, but I have a magic word.
Yeah?
Somebody else asked me on Facebook, I tell him what's my magic word. I use it also in the six DVDs I made with L&L Publishing, The Very Best of Flip. It's supimpapos. It's a power word. Supimpapos. What does it mean? It's an abbreviation of supposedly impossible, apparently possible. And that's what we do as magicians. And I made it in supimpapos. It sounds supimpapos, like you have the power.
I like that. That is completely different than any I've heard all
over. Yeah.
Well, great. It's really good to see you. Thank you very much for your time.
Good to see you, too.
Appreciate it.
I loved it. Okay.
For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Flip, and this is Scotty out.
I want to sincerely thank Flip for taking the time to chat with me and actually missed part of the conference. As it happened, because our conversation ran a little longer than expected, we missed part of one event, which meant that we didn't get to see Juan Tamaris perform. Though we had both seen him perform his full routine earlier in the conference, it is always a thrill to see the master at work. Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from one of the true international and legendary stars of magic. I always enjoy talking and learning from this man. And thank you for listening and for your financial support that helps keep this podcast free. In particular, I want to thank Steve Chesaday for continuing to be a friend of the Magic Word by making a new donation through PayPal. Steve said, "You kept me entertained on my walks for the past 2 weeks. Thank you, buddy." Also, we welcome a new friend of the Magic Word from Sweden, Marcus Magnusson. He gave a one-time donation to the Magic Word along with another nice comment. He said, "Thank you so much for doing the podcast every day of FISM. It was perfect listening during my morning walks to the Congress Center." Thanks, Steve and Marcus. Your comments really make my day, and I'm so happy that you're enjoying these podcasts. And if you would like to join your magician friends and become a donor or patron, you can make a one-time donation through PayPal by sending money to scottwellsmagic@gmail.com. Or you can make a monthly pledge through patreon.com/themagicword. You can stop and or adjust your pledge at any time through Patreon. That's Patreon, P as in Peter, A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon. If you enjoyed this podcast and happen to be listening through iTunes, then you could help me by going to the iTunes store and giving me a 5-star rating along with your positive comments. It will go far in boosting this podcast in the ratings. And it won't cost you a thing. So, until next time, stay well, get booked, and always say yes twice as much as you say no. This is Scotty out.